20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Happy Thursday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. As always, you are amazing people for being here and just allowing me to talk Packers football 365 days a year. I do not take that for granted. Always appreciate it a ton. If you're liking the show, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. Make sure to check out those Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships as well. It's never a dull day in the NFL, especially this time of year. Always some buzz, some rumors, some trade talk potentially with a certain Green Bay Packer. So let's jump into that pretty much right away. One small piece of, a tease here for you before we get into today's show. A lot of people have been asking, Andy, what are you doing for the draft? What are you doing for the draft? Well, I have one piece finalized. I'm going to just tease it right now. I can tell you for sure, Wednesday night, the night before the draft, I will be hosting a live event downtown Green Bay, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. And then I'll probably do a little bit after that as well, a little bit more of a meet and greet after that as well. So I will give you more details on that coming up. But for sure, if you're going to be in town for the draft Wednesday night, make sure to get there and I will be doing a live event. I believe I'm going to be doing something with Cheesehead TV Wednesday during the day. I'm also planning to try to do something Saturday night after the draft as well as sort of a live event, a recap of everything that happened. So I'm hoping to finalize that, but a lot more news to come. But for those of you who are looking for some sort of live event with myself and obviously, you know, doing a live Q&A and those sort of things, Wednesday night for sure, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. downtown Green Bay. More info to come. And then I'm also working on something Saturday night as well. But I will keep you posted on everything I'm going to be doing the week before. Also, Aaron Nagler and I are going to be at the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers game. I'll be providing the link for that as time goes on as well. So lots of really fun stuff coming up. But on to our main topic of conversation right away. We're going to do things a little bit reverse today. Main topic, and then we're going to go over the NFL Player Association grades, what those mean, and then we'll get to a couple of miscellaneous things at the end. But we're going to get to the meat and potatoes of this right away, and that's Jaire Alexander. And the Green Bay Packers are actively engaged in conversations to trade Jaire Alexander, at least per Ian Rappaport. This was the tweet. The Packers have had trade conversations centered around star cornerback Jaire Alexander, and they are open to moving him for the right price. Alexander, still just 28 and a two-time Pro Bowler, is considered to be the most decorated cornerback available. All right, lots to get into here. The first thing I want to make, I guess, somewhat clear here, but I'll also say, like, I don't know this for sure, but usually, all right, just peek behind the scenes. Usually how this stuff works, and most of you, of course, I'm sure already know this, is how the Rappaports, the Schefters, et cetera, of the world get their information is they have connections, they have contacts. And usually there's a little, hey, I'll do this for you, you do this for me, involved in that. And it sometimes is with an agent, sometimes it's with a coach, a GM, an organization, or somebody within an organization that's giving them information, they get something in return, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of times you can tell if a leak is coming from a team or if it's coming from an agent. So when you see reports like this, you have to put yourself in the context of who is trying to get this information out there. And in this situation, this very much feels like a Green Bay Packers-centered tweet. So let's read this one more time. The Packers have had trade conversations centered around cornerback Jaire Alexander. Who would know that? The Green Bay Packers, right? Like, I guess another team could be reporting that they've had trade talks in regards to it. But then the follow-up to it, right? They're open to moving him for the right price. That's a very Green Bay-centric thing. Alexander's still just 28 years old and a two-time Pro Bowler and considered to be the most decorated cornerback available. Hey, Ian. We'll give you the information that Jaire Alexander's via trade, but we'd like you to say a couple nice things for us about Jaire Alexander to get his name out there on the market a little bit. I'll scratch your back, you scratch my back, etc. And Ian gets the breaking news that Jaire Alexander is on the trade block, and the Packers get a warm, glowing review of their star corner that is now available on the trade block. I cannot look you in the eye and tell you that I know that 1,000,000% for sure. based on the reports that Ian Rappaport and Jordan Schultz got into an altercation at a Starbucks in Indianapolis. I'm not trying to get on Ian Rappaport's bad side here. I don't need any sauce, but that's likely the connotation here, is that Ian Rappaport is reporting on behalf of the Packers that Jair is available. This is a calling card to the Green Bay Packers that they're putting out there of, call us about Jair Alexander. Please call us. We would love to trade him and we'd love to get something in return. So please send us all of your offers so that we can gauge which one is best and react accordingly. That's my take on this. Now, that's just a small piece of this. The bigger thing, of course, is that Jair Alexander, Green Bay's corner, is on the trade block. And let's just be abundantly clear about this aspect of it. This, by all means, is the end of the Jair Alexander era in Green Bay. There's no coming back from this. You don't put him on the trade block and then say, ha, just kidding. Come on back. We'll hug it out. And you're going to be, we already knew this. This is my like fifth episode on Jair Alexander, right? It's not true. I think it's the third, but we've been talking about this ad nauseum. Jair and the breadcrumbs leading to this point have not been subtle. It has been abundantly clear that a divorce was coming. We've talked about it over and over and over again. This was very clear, and it became even more clear when Goody talked about it, you know, just saying that we're still working on it, when he talked about it in his press conference the other day. It has been clear for a while now, and this makes it even more crystal clear. Jair Alexander, number 23, Green Bay Packers, has played his last game as a member of the organization. Maybe somewhere down the road, you know, something crazy can happen. You never say never in this business. But for now, Jair Alexander done being a Green Bay Packer, and this will be the end of that era. And what happens next is what Green Bay is trying to do is manipulate this to get something in return for Jair Alexander so that they don't just have to release him outright. And here's the thing. This conversation is one of the most insane Rorschach tests that you could possibly imagine. The breadth of ideas of what Green Bay should get in a trade for Jair Alexander is insane. Anywhere from they should be getting top of the line draft picks, multiple, to they're not going to get anything whatsoever. And it's a joke if you think he's going to get anything. The ideas of why in the heck is Green Bay trading Jair Alexander to thank God that he's gone, to get rid of him off the team. It is unbelievable. And I mean, we've seen some of this, obviously, with Aaron Rodgers getting traded and the leverage talks and what's going to get in return and things like that. But the ideas are all over the place. I posted a poll out on Twitter, and it's not, again, these things aren't exactly scientific, right? But my Twitter is followed primarily by Packer fans. So this is usually going to tell you what Packer fans are thinking. And I said, what do you expect to get in a trade for Jair Alexander? And the options were a top 100 pick, which is a round one, two, or three pick, a early day three pick, which is a fourth or maybe a very early fifth rounder, a sixth or seventh round pick, or a late pick swap, meaning maybe you give up Jair Alexander and a seventh and you get a sixth or something like that, right? A sixth or a seventh or a late round pick swap, or nothing. So again, top 100 pick, early day three pick, sixth, seventh slash pick swap, something in that range, or nothing. Those are your four options. 25%, one out of every four people who responded said that Green Bay would get a top 100 pick in return. All I'm going to say is A, shoot lower, and B, good luck with that. And C, my goodness, do I hope you are right. I will gladly, lovingly, glowingly, come on, I will do a lone episode, just, you know, eating crow, being like, you guys were all right. You 25.1% of you that said top 100 pick, you were right. I was wrong. And it will be spectacular. I will be glowing and grinning from ear to ear that Green Bay was able to get a top 100 pick. I will be beyond stunned if that's what they get. Early day three pick, so a fourth or fifth round pick, 39.5% of people thought that that's what Green Bay would get in return. Sixth, seventh, or late round pick swap, something like that, 23.6%, and nothing is 11.8% of people. At least that responded to this poll. And this is a wide range. I've seen different experts that have believed different things. Ben Fennell, you know, obviously friend of the show, said, quote, laughing out loud, no one is taking that contract and that 2025 cap hit. I've talked to multiple people that believe it is a conditional late round pick at best. But kudos to Jason Wilde, who was able to go out there and talk to three different NFL executives, And just to give you an idea of how insane and absurd of a Rorschach test this is, of like what you're looking at here. Number one, asked what the executive thought Alexander would get in return. The first one replied, not good. That executive suggested Alexander might not even fetch a sixth round draft pick. That's one executive's take. Maybe that executive is on a team that's trying to acquire Jair Alexander. Who knows? We'll see. Number two, another veteran NFL executive said he believed the Packers could get more. I would think he can still play. So just more than a sixth round pick. Doesn't specifically say what, but more than a sixth round pick. And then a third executive said the Packers could ask for a third round pick for Alexander and perhaps settle for a fourth or fifth rounder. I think that is more of the range that you're looking at. I do think Green Bay gets something. Okay. I don't think, and this is actually a change for me. All right. The last time we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, my exact words, I actually want to make sure that I have it here because I have my notes from the last time we talked about this. My exact words were, at least in my notes, it was, where do we go here? Expect nothing, hope for something. My guess is he gets cut. My hope is that it's a conditional sixth round pick. So like a sixth that could turn into a fifth. All right. So I'm actually changing it a little bit. All right. The more I think about this, I do think that they get something, but I think right around that conditional sixth or seventh round pick is right around what Green Bay is going to get in return. And we'll go over why throughout the course of the day today. But I do think they get something. I do think some team is going to be willing to give up some late round draft choice to get him on their team. And that's where I think this is. But the fact that it is a unbelievable, you know, widely differentiated viewpoint of this from fans, from executives, from people who cover the team, it is pretty crazy. But I will say from the people that I've seen that cover the team are far more in the range of don't expect much, expect it to be something small, if anything. That seems to be the overarching feel from, you know, Wendell Ferreira, Aaron Nagler, myself, Ken Ingles, etc. That seems to be the overarching thought. Justice Mosqueda, etc. All right. And Ben Fennell as well, who said doesn't think he's going to get anything, right? Interesting dynamic. And how this plays out is going to be very, very interesting. As we've talked about, this has not been something that has come, you know, out of nowhere. Missed time, suspensions, more injuries in 2024, frustration on both sides. Jair at the end of the year saying he doesn't know if he's going to be on the team, didn't want to talk because he didn't have anything positive to say. It just has been right there for everyone to see for some time now. And I've said it before and I'll say it again. I don't think this is something that there has to be a bad guy here. I think sometimes these things just happen. Sometimes you just fall out of love, right? And with Jair and the Packers, it just feels like Green Bay needs to go in a different direction, find a new corner, somebody that's going to play a little bit more, be a bit more reliable, and go with that. And for Jair, it feels like he's lost a little bit of that mojo, needs to get it back, needs a fresh coat of paint, needs something new. Sometimes that's all you need, just a little bit more spice. Maybe he gets that somewhere else. It just feels like it's time for both. I don't think there's a bad guy here. I don't think the Packers are doing anything irresponsible. I don't think Jair's, again, trying not to play or anything like that. I just think it's time to go in different directions for both sides. As far as that missed time goes, 20 missed games in his last 34 games. So he's missed 20 of his last 34. Missed 34 of his last 68. It's 50%, right? It's actually, if you add in like the Bears game where he played 10 snaps, it's actually like one less because he barely played in that one. So it's like he's playing less than 50% of the games over a four-year period of time. It's an unbelievable, you know, just way of looking at it of how much time he's missed. There's been that disconnect. His run defense and tackling have not been the same. My grades have gone significantly down since that initial shoulder injury for whatever that's worth. And then, of course, you've got this big contract as well. We've talked about the contract in the past. $17.5 million on a one-year deal is what you're basically looking at for this contract. All the bonuses are already paid out. It's just the base salary and the, you know, workout bonuses and the, you know, per game incentives and things like that that are left that will come to $17.5 million. And again, the question that you have to ask yourself, you know, from a Packers standpoint, Is Jair on a one-year deal worth $17.5 million? And what we don't know is if maybe that's not even the thing. Maybe just some of this disconnect between the organization and Jair is what's causing this problem. Maybe it's not even the lost time. Maybe they see Jair fighting back and wanting to play, and that's not even the issue. Maybe it's some other stuff. Maybe it has nothing to do with that, and it's just the playing time stuff. We don't know for sure, but we know that Green Bay is willing to trade him, which tells us something has gone wrong. The clear and obvious one is the playing time. $17.5 million for good Jair. Like the corner, DJ Reed, right, for the Jets. Good corner. Jair, non-prime Jair Alexander, the Jair Alexander we've seen over the last, you know, few years or whatever, when healthy, is very clearly better than DJ Reed. There's no question about that. And DJ Reed's going to be one of the highest paid free agents on the market and, you know, is probably like a top five free agent in this class. Jair Alexander would be better than that if healthy and would easily be worth a $17.5 million deal. Okay, on a one-year deal. There's no more guarantees on the base salaries left. And any team trading for him would take on this one-year $17.5 million. It's actually a two-year $37 million, but $17.5 million this year. And then again, you get to decide. It's basically a team option next year because it's non-guaranteed. It's not a terrible contract if he plays. In fact, it's a fine contract. $17.5 million over a 17-game season, million per game is what you're looking at. But we've talked about, we just talked about it the other day. If he plays 17 games, it's a no-brainer. You're happy with it. You love it. There's no question about it. But he has played less than half of his games over a four-year period of time. What you're doing here, and I see people upset, why are you trading away Jair Alexander? He's your best corner. You need him come playoff time. He hasn't been available come playoff time. This is nothing more than input-output, putting it in the algorithm. You look at Jair Alexander and you say, you're going to give $17.5 million for 17 games and the algo is going to point out, absolutely, no question about it, take it, we want it. You put in the factors of he's missed 50% of his games over a four-year period of time. He's missed more than 50% over his last 34 games, 20 out of his last 34, 20 games. He's played 14 of his last 34 games, 14 of 34. 13, if you include that Bears game where he barely played 11 snaps or whatever and should not have been playing in that game. 13 of 34, basically. That's an absurd number. And I'm not blaming Jair here. Sometimes this stuff just happens. But you add on top of that, that's in the prime of his career. The portion of his career where you should have fewer injuries. As he gets to 28, 29, 30 years old over the next couple of years, you're expecting probably more wear and tear, more breaking down, more injuries, which usually happens with players like this. He's not the most physically built guy in the world. It's not to say he's not an unbelievable athlete. He is, but it again gives you more reason for concern as well as he continues to take hits and, you know, try to, you know, tackle, you know, players like Derrick Henry in the open field, et cetera. Like he can wear you down. And we've seen it be a problem. We've seen a variety of different issues. So the algorithm is just, it's just math. It's just numbers at this point. You're just putting in, hey, Jair Alexander, $17.5 million contract, has not been able to stay on the field. Your estimation is going to be, we think he's going to play 8 games. Like that, you have to input that into your decision-making. You like, if you're just going and saying, yeah, we think he's going to play all 17, we're good to go. What are you basing that off of? That you're, I mean, you might as well go play the roulette table. You're just gambling at this point. The honest way to do it, if you're trying to make an evaluation, is to input the numbers and say, here's the injury history. It usually gets worse with age. What is the expected outcome of how many games he's going to play? And the expected outcome has got to be somewhere around 8, 8.5 games at best. So if that's the case, are you going to pay 17.5 million for 8.5 games, 8 games, whatever it might end up being? You probably shouldn't. That's a huge contract for 8 games, 8.5 games, whatever it ends up being. And that's what goes into this decision. It's not just that he's, you know, he's a good corner. If you knew he's going to be healthy, if there were these signs that he was healthy, it's an easy decision. But when you're looking at it logically and saying, hey, he probably isn't going to be that way, it's too much of a contract. And then you have to add on top of it, if you are able to get something in return, because I saw somebody post this, right? Like, why would I not want Jair for 2 years over a third round pick? What am I going to do with a third round pick? All right. What possible am I, like, if my choice is Jair or a third round pick, give me Jair Alexander. okay, I understand where you're coming from. I understand the line of thinking. Here's the cost analysis of what you have to do here. $17.5 million just this year. Let's screw the second year in its entirety. That's in the future. It's non-guaranteed. You can get off of it or you can take it if you want. That's a future decision, right? Right now, your decision is $17.5 million for Jair Alexander. Do you want $17.5 million for Jair on 1 year, knowing that he's had all these injuries and you're basically playing some sort of gambling game or roulette or whatever you want to call it to decide that you think he's going to play enough games to pay off a $17.5 million deal? But add on top of that, the cost of what you could go get in free agency by spending that $17.5 million on another player and whatever draft pick that you're getting in return, even if it's a fifth round pick, sixth round pick, seventh round pick, that's also a piece of the equation. So would I rather have a Jair Alexander that I cannot count on, that I don't know if he's going to play, that when push comes to shove, if there is some sort of injury issue, he probably is not going to play? Not blaming Jair. I have no idea what level of pain and anything that he has been going through or risk of re-injury. No idea. Can't judge that whatsoever. Don't want to judge it whatsoever. Too much judging. Don't care about judging people. All we can go is based off of the facts. And the facts is that he hasn't been able to play and you are potentially getting $17.5 million back plus additional compensation if you can find a trade. Give me the $17.5 million and the additional draft capital, even if it's a sixth or seventh round pick. Give me that over what I cannot count on. As a general manager, as a head coach, what you want is constants. You don't want variables. And right now, Jair Alexander is a constant variable. That's what you generally don't want in your locker room. That's not what you want from week to week. You want consistency and you want constants. You want somebody that you know you're going to be able to count on more often than not. And Jair Alexander, whether it's been via the 1 week suspension that he got, the multitude of injuries, the disagreements and frustration that's been there, it's a variable. It's a constant variable. It's a wild card. And you don't know when you're trying to input of like, what is he going to give us? It's the computer is going to input unknown. It's like the magic eight ball is just going to say, please shake again. We don't know. So, or destination unknown, whatever it is. You want to be able to plot it out a little bit better and know that you can, and it's not to say that anything's a guarantee. You could go spend that $17.5 million on a new corner and he could come in and tear his Achilles or pop his Achilles or tear his ACL, whatever, on day one. These things can happen. But Jair is just, again, it's too much of an inconsistency. It's too much of a variable. It's too much of a wild card. And I can understand why Green Bay does not want to go through with that when you're paying an exorbitant amount of money. That's the easy part of this. It is a computer equation, and the computer is going to spit out probably time to move on. One more thing on top of that, for those of you that are saying, keep Jair Alexander, it's worth the risk, you might end up being right. Jair this year could go out, find a new team, play 16 games, 15 games, 14 games, 17 games, whatever it ends up being, play like a second team all pro, somewhere in that range, Pro Bowl player, and Green Bay might get, a sixth round pick in return that doesn't even make the team. You easily could end up being right. But we don't have the benefit of knowing what's going to happen next. We don't get the benefit of hindsight. We can only look at this with the logical lens of what we've seen so far and what we have to sort of predict is going to happen in the future to the best of a GM's ability, right? And it's really hard to look at the body of work over four seasons for Jair Alexander and say, what this has shown is it's going to equate to a 17-game season that looks awesome. It's just very unlikely. You're playing the odds, and the odds are not in your favor. And guess what? Every once in a while, you might put money on the numbers on the roulette board. You might put it on number 23, and number 23 might hit. And it's going to be awesome. Euphoric feeling, right? And some team might do that. Some team is going to probably put, some chip. And it might just be a seventh round chip, a little, $10 chip on 23, and it might come up huge. And maybe that could have been Green Bay. Maybe Green Bay could have bet on him for one more year. But take the injuries aside, It has felt like a relationship that has not gone the way that you've wanted to. There's been a decline on the field, and it probably seems better again for every side to move forward in this situation. And I know there is a lot of love for Jair out there, understandably so. Say it once again, I don't think he's a bad guy in this scenario. I don't think the Packers are a bad guy. Just think it's one of these business decisions that's probably best for everyone involved. So yeah, as far as then we kind of get into the trade value conversation, what can Green Bay get in return? Well, we just talked about all this stuff as to why Green Bay would want to move on. It's going to be those exact same things as why some team may not be willing to give any sort of significant trade compensation. There's some reasons you would. Let's start there. Let's talk about the positives here. It's a non-guaranteed deal. So you're going to trade for him, and everything on that deal is non-guaranteed that the team acquires him for. The contract's not terrible, again, if he plays. 1 year, $17.5 million, basically a team option for like $19.5 million the next year. Those are not bad deals for Jair if he can go out there and play. There's just no guarantee he can do that. But the contract in and of itself is not a terrible contract, especially because it's non-guaranteed. We know he's a super talented player. He's still only 28 years old. And maybe the biggest thing going in Green Bay's favor is that NFL teams and general managers a lot of times are stupid. Like, we see bad deals all the time. And I would make an argument that one of the best GMs at fleecing other GMs out of draft picks for players that they're ready to move on from is Brian Gutekunst. He is very, very good at it. Man, this team was able to get a fourth round pick for HaHa Clinton Dix when they had no right getting a fourth round pick for HaHa Clinton Dix, as Zachary Jacobson pointed out on Wednesday. No right getting a fourth round for HaHa, yet they did. It's the right move. Green Bay made it, and they ripped Washington off in that situation. The Aaron Rodgers trade was a huge one in Green Bay's favor. They have traded like Kadar Hallman for draft picks. They've traded Cole Van Lannen for draft picks. Like, they have found ways to get draft capital for players that really should not probably get draft capital. Goody's been amazing at it. So could he find a way to get a fourth round pick, or, you know, something maybe a little bit more? Maybe. I'm not going to completely put it past him. And like I said, other GMs and teams tend to do some stupid things from time to time. So maybe they can find a way to fleece some team out of a premium pick, and we can all be overjoyed about it. But they're going to look at a variety of different things. And when you're normally looking at a trade, what you're looking at is talent. All right, well, Jair is clearly a very talented player. There's no question about that. Age, he's 28 years old. Still should be in the prime of his career. Injury history, ooh, okay. Well, we talked about that. That's not ideal. Recent play's been good. Not great. Not elite. Not Pro Bowl caliber, but he's still a good corner. There's zero question about that, right? Like, if you had a game today, any of the 32 teams would have Jair in their starting three of corners. Every single one. 32 out of 32. He's still a very good corner, right? So, like, there's not a question about that. His recent play has been good, but it's not elite level, all right? So we have to understand that as well. The contract is fine if he plays, but it's too much if he doesn't play enough, right? That's where you sort of get into this interesting situation. Of course, then there's the negotiation process. Who else is bidding for Jair Alexander? What sort of need do you have at corner? What available players are out there at the same position? Those are all things that are going to factor in to a potential market for Jair Alexander. But the biggest things are probably that injury history, the teams knowing that Green Bay is going to move on from him and not wanting to take on that contract, knowing that there has been that injury situation or situations. That's what you're probably looking at. So I will say once more, don't expect a ton. And if it ends up being something more, it'll be a happy surprise. But this is a very complicated situation. It's not necessarily in Green Bay's favor, but they do have a good corner that some teams might want. And that's not nothing. And hopefully Goody can take this potential nothing situation and turn it into something, even if it's less than maybe some people are hoping for. But for those of you that are hoping for a top 100 draft pick or some big time player or some unbelievable move in return for Jair Alexander, I would just pump the brakes a little bit. Lower those expectations. Don't expect it. Happy to be wrong. We'll sing all of your praises and we'll gladly call out my L if it ends up being the case, but do not expect it at all, and would be pretty stunned if it ends up being anything in the top 100 of the draft. All right. Other topic today, NFL Players Association grades. Not going to spend a ton of time on this, and we'll kind of just wrap it up, but we'll go through the grades quick. Overall, they were seventh in 2023. They were seventh this year. They were third in 2023. So they went from third overall ranking to 7th. Their treatment of families, they got a B, which was 12th overall. Food and dining, they got an A minus, which was 6th overall out of 32 teams. Nutrition and dietitian, they got an A minus, which was 7th. Locker room, they got a B, which was 12th. Training staff, B, which was 16th. Weight room, A, which was 5th. Strength coaches, B, which was 27th. More on that in a moment. Team travel was 9th, or it was an A minus, which was 9th. Head coach, A minus, which was 20th, which is a weird thing. Ownership, A minus, which was 11th. All right. So overall, from 23 to 24, so let's take it from where they were in 23 to where they were now in 2024. Overall, they went down 4 spots on the rankings. So they were, again, 3rd last year. They were 7th this year. Family, treatment of families, they went down 2 spots. Food and dining, they were even. Nutrition, they went up 7 spots. Locker room went up 3 spots. Training staff was even. Weight room was up 2 spots. Travel was down 5 spots. Coach was up 1 spot. Ownership was down 5 spots. The big one, strength and conditioning, was down 19 spots. They went from the 8th best strength coach ranking to the 27th. I'll touch base on that again more in just a moment. If you're looking at it from a letter grade standpoint, though, you saw a lot of them going down in the rankings, right? From like this year, from last year to this year. But if you look at the letter grades, the family treatment of families, they went from a C plus to a B. That's a pretty big jump. Food and dining went from a B plus to an A minus. That's a jump. Nutrition went from B to A minus. That's a jump. Locker room went from B minus to B. That's an upgrade. Training staff went from B to B, so stayed status quo. Weight room went from A to A, stayed status quo. Team travel went from a B plus to an A minus. That's a step up. Head coach went from a B plus to an A minus. That's a step up. The only two that went down in grade from 2023 to 2024 were ownership, which went from an A to an A minus. That's on you guys. That's on you, the owners. Step it up. The ownership grade should be number one in Green Bay. So for all of you that got your stock certificate on the wall, get after it. You need to be better owners. You went from an A to an A minus. I am judging all of you. And for those that are wondering, I am not actually an owner. It's one thing I don't have. I'm a season ticket holder. I do a podcast 365 days a year, but I'm not an owner. That one little clause of like, if you're an owner of the team, you can't be say anything disparaging about the NFL or the Packers or things like that. Just figured maybe that would not be the best thing for me to have. Do I think anything would have come of it? No, just to be on the extra safe side. But I digress. The big one, though, that we kind of talked about, strength coaches, went from an A minus to a B. Let me say this. All of the grades, really, for the most part, were fine. Like, look at the grades in totality. If this would have been my report card at any point in time, man, I would have been jumping for joy. B, A minus, A minus. B, A minus, A minus, B, B, A, B, A minus, A minus, A minus. The lowest grade on anything was a B, okay? So to take any of these, regardless of where they ranked, there's no bad grades here for Green Bay. And a lot of A's, a lot of B's. And remember, they were the 7th overall graded organization by the players. That's a big time thing. But the one thing that is interesting of all of this is the strength coaches grade, primarily because they changed over their strength and conditioning staff this past year. And they had a very high grade. When we talked to Mike Wall, he knew people within that strength and conditioning staff that he thought did an amazing job. Everyone I ever talked to thought they did an amazing job, but they brought in an entirely different staff from San Fran. And the interesting aspect here is that the players clearly were not a fan of that transition. Maybe it means nothing. Maybe it means something, but it is noteworthy, right? That they change it out. And they went from an A minus to a flat B and went from 8th overall grade to, or 8th overall ranking to 27th in the league, and clearly their lowest grade. So it was something that was in the, you know, top quarter of teams to now basically in that bottom range. So very interesting there. Maybe much ado about nothing, but it is interesting nonetheless. What I will argue here, what I will say is when you're looking at these grades, the only thing that really matters is the fringes. If you're getting anything in the C, D, or F range, that is something that you really need to look at. I think anything that's a B or better, I don't think really moves the needle one way. Yes, if your strength coaches like went down significantly, you probably want to look at that. I think that's what's the most interesting. You know, if head coach is an A minus, but it's 20th overall, I don't know if that even tells you anything. I honestly don't think it does. So it's still an A minus. It's a good grade no matter what. Give me an A minus on everything for the rest of my life, right? I will gladly take that. So I think the big one is the strength coach change. And then if there were anything, you know, C or worse, it would be much more noteworthy. There's not. And I think for that reason, it's good to note, but not super important at the same time. Other just quick miscellaneous news and notes. The NFL is considering expanding replay assist for several fouls, but only those that are called on the field. Love it. More replay assist is better. Eye in the sky is good. I do think like the example that they showed of like a clear and obvious face mask penalty that wasn't called on the field. Would I like to see the NFL signaling down and saying it? Yes. But I do get where there is this like connotation, right? Of like, you could probably find something on every play. So you're going to call down on every play, right? Like it just gets into a little bit of a no man's land. And the NFL is basically saying it's a non-starter, that they're not going to get into that. If there's not something called on the field, they're not going to radio down and call something. Because again, you just end up in Pandora's box, right? Well, why did you call down for that play, but not call down for this play? And it ends up second guessing, is the league colluding to get the Chiefs to win? Because, so I actually think the NFL is very smart in this. I know it sucks because you could easily see a clear and obvious face mask penalty. And if it didn't get called, like you would hope that they could call down and fix it. But again, what's going to happen is they're going to catch a face mask penalty on, you know, that, you know, was on Patrick Mahomes early in the game. And then a little bit later, there's going to be maybe a less descript face mask penalty. And all the internet sleuths are going to be out there. I've seen like, look at, they called the one on Patrick Mahomes, but the one on Tua Tagovailoa didn't get called at all. The NFL loves the Chiefs and hates the Dolphins and wants Patrick Mahomes in the Super Bowl. So yada, yada, yada. We're going to get all the conspiracy theories, right? So I actually think the NFL is probably very smart in not doing it that way. NFL also announced that the tush push play resulted in zero injuries this past year. That pretty much ends any discussion of whether or not it's going to get banned. I would think that that ends the discussion right there. And then NFL putting electronic system to measure first downs, chain crew would be a backup. I'm interested if this is just like just for measuring it, or if it doesn't sound like it's spotting it, but this will be one to kind of keep an eye on to see how it works. But it does sound like it's going to be in effect for 2025, 2026. And then also Harold Landry and Jonathan Allen, defensive end and defensive tackle respectively, are on the trade block as well. I would not expect either in Green Bay, at least via trade, maybe Jonathan Allen if he reaches, you know, free agency and they cut him. Harold Landry, a little bit more of a pass rusher, had an injury history. Goody just talked about not wanting platoon players. He doesn't hold up great against the run. He's sort of a peak and valley sort of guy, runs hot and cold, sometimes looks good, sometimes doesn't. I don't think that's going to be Green Bay's cup of tea. Jonathan Allen, 30 years old, has seen a decline, isn't quite the player that he once was, would fit. But I don't think that's the direction to go, especially with a very strong defensive tackle class. So I don't think Green Bay is going to be interested in either of those players. That, friends, is going to do it for me today. Thank you so much for joining me. I'll be right back here tomorrow, 365 days a year. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Guestford, Stepke, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Razul Douglas Time, and Jake Kohner. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.